Good morning, everyone. So imagining a world without plentiful oil is a thought that brings relief to most people in the carbon-bloated industrialized world.
It's true.
Imagining a world without oil is probably what Al Gore does every night in bed.
Absolutely. When you have to come up with the alternatives, yeah.
But when Iran is doing the dreaming and the dreams sound like they're starting to come true, listen.
We are witnessing the inauguration of the receipt of the first batch of yellow cake that was produced in Gachin mines in the province of Bandar Abbas.
That's right, Iran mining its own uranium. When it starts to do the dreaming and the dreams start to come true, the world gets very, very nervous. That's Iran's Atomic Energy Organization chief Ali Akbar Salahi speaking yesterday to Iran's press TV, outlining what he thinks is a milestone on the road to nuclear independence.
This means that Iran has become self-sufficient in the entire fuel cycle.
What does this mean? Iran producing yellowcake uranium from ore mined within its own borders. On the rest of the cycle, processing, enriching, and weaponizing, the Iranians are also believed to have made progress. Joining us now is Stephen Kinzer, author of Reset, Iran, Turkey, and America's Future. Good morning, Stephen.
Good to be with you.
So we learned sort of last week through all the WikiLeaks diplomatic cables how alarmed Iran's neighbors are about Iran getting a nuclear capability. This really isn't so much about energy as it is about playing in a dangerous neighborhood. How much more alarm would you expect from the announcement over the weekend?
Certainly we're in an alarmist phase. It's been almost 20 years since we've been told that Iran is 2 to 3 years away from having a nuclear weapon. There seems to have been quite a bit done, particularly in a covert way, to obstruct that process. There are a lot of problems inside that program. Nonetheless, there's no doubt that it's advancing. I don't think this latest development is cause for some instant panic that the nuclear bomb in Iran is now just around the corner. Nonetheless, it underlines what has always been clear, that this is a growing and an urgent case. We are not developing a strategy to deal with it except to denounce it and to sanction Iran, but we have never even asked Iran the fundamental question, what would it take for you to do what we would like you to do on your nuclear program? We haven't even begun the diplomatic process, so the centrifuges are spinning, the yellow cake, as we're now being told, is being produced, and we seem to be sitting on the sidelines wringing our hands without any true effort at diplomatic engagement.
We're speaking with Stephen Kinzer, author of Reset, Iran, Turkey, and America's Future. Reset is the name of the book. The notion of covert sort of slowing down the Iranians reminds me of the story as recently as last week, the assassination of those two nuclear scientists inside Iran. You say the alarmist period has gone on for 20 years since that was when we were told Iran was 2 years away from getting a bomb. What do you make of these talks today in Geneva? This morning, James Reynolds of our partner, the BBC, suggested that it's a bluff, that no one really believes, or a lot of people don't believe, Iran has enough yellow cake to do anything significant within its own borders.
I agree with that assessment, and I also believe that these negotiations are not going to produce anything substantive. There's no prospect of bringing Iran to a substantial compromise unless Iran is offered something in return. Our negotiating position is essentially that Iran must negotiate with us on this one issue. But if you put yourself in their shoes, it's not in their interest to do this. They also have things they'd like to get in a negotiation. If we open up the agenda and we tell Iran, we have some serious concerns about what you do, why don't you tell us what your concerns are about us, and let's see if we can make a deal so that everybody can get something. Then we hold out the prospect for being able to derail this program or at least put it under true international sanctions and make it transparent, which is what we would like. But as long as we insist on narrowing the agenda to just the one issue we care about, it's very unlikely we're going to make any diplomatic progress.
Well, I want you to think in your mind, because at the end of the segment, I'm going to ask you what Iran does want, and you can just sort of tell me what you would answer if you were an Iranian diplomat. But we often simplify this question by thinking of it being exclusively about Iran versus the great Satan, the United States. In fact, what's the message for Saudi Arabia, the rival oil producer to Iran, of this development?
There's no doubt that Saudi Arabia does not want reconciliation between the United States and Iran. If that happens, Saudi Arabia instantly becomes much less important to us. And I think the Saudis are very aware of this. That's part of what's behind some of these colorful statements that came out in the WikiLeaks documents. So it's true that the Saudis treat it for religious reasons and for geopolitical reasons, see Iran as some kind of a rival, and they're right to do so. But when you look at Saudi Arabia's long-term strategic interests, you see that they really don't coincide with ours. And if you look coolly at them, you'll see that Iran's long-term strategic interests, which are state interests that don't change as regimes change, actually overlap much closer to ours than Saudi Arabia's. Saudi Arabia, as we learn from the WikiLeaks now, is still the principal supporter of al-Qaeda. It's the principal source of financing for al-Qaeda. This is not a surprise, but it's quite something to see it in these documents. Meanwhile, Iran is the bitter enemy of radical movements like Taliban and al-Qaeda. So just start from that, and you can go on to other strategic issues in the Middle East and realize that there's no major strategic goal that the U.S. wants to reach in the Middle East that can be reached without Iran. So some kind of reconciliation there is very much in our interest, and I think some of the Gulf states see that. They see it wouldn't be in their interest, and they're doing everything they can to upset that possibility.
So, Stephen, does the mistrust of Iran that's supposedly revealed in the WikiLeaks diplomatic cables, does that help or hurt in the attempt to control Iran and their nuclear policy?
I don't think it really is very substantial. I have no doubt that these diplomats in Arab countries are telling the Iranians the same thing about the Americans when they see them. That's the way diplomacy works. They're saying, oh, these crazy Americans, they're pressuring us. You never know what they're going to do. So I don't take it too seriously when I hear that cut off the head of the snake thing from the king of Saudi Arabia. It only makes me ask, who is the real snake in that part of the world?
All right, Stephen Kinzer, you're an Iranian diplomat. The question is posed to you. What do you want, Iran, to get rid of your nuclear program? Give it to me.
I think in a very frustrating way, the Iranians would say something like, we want dignity. We want respect. And, of course, the Americans would become impatient and say, but what does that mean?
And then they would go, what about Ahmadinejad?
What the Soviets wanted in the Helsinki talks, they wanted security guarantees and the ability to enter into international organizations like World Trade Organization, which we are preventing Iran from entering into.
We'll see if they get asked the question. It is the big ask in Iranian diplomacy. Stephen Kinzer, author of Reset, Iran, Turkey, and America's Future, and the Iranian policy on nukes, is currently on the table in Geneva right now. Thank you, Stephen.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.